You are tuned to 106.1 FM WSCA LP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio.
It's called Milwaukee, Here I Come.
Take it away, Chip.
Well, Milwaukee's where we're born. We came here working in a brewery and making finest beer. She came to me on a Friday night, said, "Let's go to Tennessee." We went down to Nashville for the Grand Ole Opry. We turned on the TV, Ernest Tubb was singing loud. She said, "That's a man for me." Well, I love him, there's no doubt. I'm leaving here right now just to find out where he's at. If I can find him, I'll settle for that bluegrass western flat. So I'm gonna get on the old turnpike and I'm gonna ride. I'm gonna leave this town to you decide which one you want the most. My three stars ring. Milwaukee, here I come from Nashville, Tennessee. On the TV, Minnie Pearl was talking loud. I said, "That's a gal for me. Well, I love her, there's no doubt. Leaving here right now just to find out where she's at. If I can't find her, I'll settle for that pretty little Tammy Wynette. So I'm gonna get on the Wilson bike and I'm gonna ride. I'm gonna leave this town to you decide which one you want the most. My three stars me. Milwaukee, here I come from Nashville, Tennessee." Get all drunked up and trade for rolls. It's one thing I know for sure, I'll always be blue. Ain't no way to get drunk enough to stop my loving you. So I'm gonna get on the old turnpike and I'm gonna ride. I'm gonna leave the town to you decide which one you want the most. My blue stars me. Milwaukee, here I come from Nashville, Tennessee. George Jones, me.
Milwaukee, here I come from Nashville, Tennessee.
I said, which one you want the most? Boston Jones, me.
Milwaukee, here I come from Nashville, Tennessee.
Hey guys, it's time for Local Folk. I'm your host, Steve Carrigan. And like always, that track that we heard right at the beginning is an indicator of who I have for a guest tonight, who I will introduce in just a moment. But as you know, I need to give you a little bit of other information, and that would come from the National Weather Service. And I also want to let you know that tonight is a little bit special because, as you know, here we are on community radio. And sometimes people are trying to get, just like I tried to, just like I have a show now, other people are working on getting their shows and everything else. And I have one of my former guests and a great friend of mine, Chris Vaughn, and he is running the sound tonight. So it's the first time that he's ever done it. We've explained what's going on and everything, but because it is the first time, there may be one or two small things that might happen, we'll call them. And but I'm happy to have him with us because he's going to be able to hopefully regulate the sound between me and my guest, who I'd like to introduce right now. Tonight, my guest is John Ross, J-O-N Ross. And he is, you know, I'll tell you what, I had on a while back Cecil Abels from the New England Bluegrass Band, of which John Ross is a part of. He's also been a part of so many bands that I think it literally fills up an entire page. I mean, anything from G.E. Smith, I remember that from the Saturday Night Live band. There's been blues, John Hammond Jr. I'm looking at here, et cetera, et cetera. And the Fabulous Thunderbirds, New England Bluegrass Band as well. I mean, and so it is, you know, and he lists his genre as blues, swing, bluegrass, et cetera. All right. And I'm psyched to have him here, and I'm going to get his microphone actually on right now. John, whoa, hold on a moment.
Take it away, Chip.
Don't take it away, Chip.
Not yet.
Take it away, Chip,
take
now.
Take it away, John.
Huh? Take it away, John. Welcome to Local Folk.
Thanks very much for having me on the show. And before we go further, I want to thank you on behalf of the citizens of the Seacoast area for such a fine weather report.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
It could be a lot worse this time.
Man, it could be. You know, I get that from the computer, and I often notice that it's incorrect.
I thought you were calling that.
I usually look out the window and say, I don't see any clouds, but I mean, hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do. So,
well, anyway, thanks for having me on the show. I've listened to several episodes of your shows. You know, you mentioned Cecil, and I heard that show, and I like what you're doing here. So glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. The song that we played as we started, right, you had explained to me before, was from a band that you first started with. Tell me about that.
All right. Well, no, this would be the last band I was in before I moved to the Seacoast area, which was in the fall of 1982 is when I came here from Tucson, Arizona.
Oh.
And what we heard earlier before the weather and the announcements was a cut by Summer Dog, Bluegrass Experience, Mariachi and Swing Ensemble of Tucson, Arizona. And it was a band that's been a Tucson institution for years, and I was lucky enough to be part of it in its last few years. And so we heard some flat-out bluegrass going on. That was a Jimmy Martin number.
So what you played was bluegrass, but did you say mariachi and swing as well?
Well, that's what the band evolved into. We were in Tucson, 50 miles north of the border of Mexico, and you cannot help but be influenced by that music.
No.
Great folk music comes out of Mexico.
Yes, it does.
From mariachi to norteño, yeah. The Guadalajara music.
Cumbia?
Cumbia, sure enough. Yeah. So anyway, we had a couple of numbers we did that were mariachi numbers.
I want to, that's super cool. I used to live in Mexico. I lived there for 9 months, and we did cumbia and mariachi and all that. In fact, I had an old blues guy, friend of mine, when I was way back then, and he requested that I send him back one of those giant
Guitarón. A six-string bass with three frets on it, and the strings are a foot off of the fingerboard. And
that's right, and the back is fat. You know, the back
right,
sticks
no, it looks
out.
Like a big turtle.
Do you have one of those?
I do not have a guitarón. Okay. I have been around guitarons. I have a vihuela, which is another string instrument, a five-string instrument used in the mariachi band, and it's built like a miniature guitarón. The thing that's interesting about that, and playing mariachi music with a bluegrass band, a lot of the instruments have the same function. The vihuela has the same backbeat,
okay,
percussive rhythmic element as the mandolin.
Okay.
And, of course, there's the violins.
Yeah.
And there's just so many similarities that it was natural for this band, Summer Dog, to go into some mariachi material.
Okay, so there's some crossover between bluegrass and mariachi.
If you look hard enough, you can find it.
Yeah. You know? Well, so maybe it's not. I guess they're just named so differently. But hey, that's super
cool. It's folk music.
It's folk music. And I want to talk. Well, you started playing the bluegrass with this band, but then you went on to play some swing. You said,
"Well, I evolved into a jazz musician." I guess it's safe to say, you know, after I'd been playing with this bluegrass band for a while. I brought another example of the same band we heard firing down on the bluegrass there.
See, that's what I'd like to hear. Why don't we play a little bit of that? What
track is
that?
Doing a Duke Ellington number called It Don't Mean a Thing. If it ain't got that
probably
swing.
Number three, right?
It is.
All right, so Chris Vaughn, let's make this happen.
That cue quick enough.
We're going to track number three, and we're pressing that red button right there.
If it ain't got that swing.
All right, here we go. And we'll be right back here on Local Folk.
It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. It don't mean a thing. All you gotta do is sing. Do I, 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 do I. Well, it makes no difference if it's sweet or hot. Oh, you got that rhythm, give it everything you got. It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. Mwah, 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 mwah.
All right, so that was an example of swing music that you were playing with your bluegrass and mariachi band.
So you're right, bluegrass, mariachi, and swing ensemble. Yes, you can hear what we were doing with that type of material without changing the instrumentation of the bluegrass band.
No, not changing it. Yeah, just...
Still a five-string banjo and upright bass, guitar, mandolin, fiddle.
I mean, it almost sounded like it fit in very naturally with that style of music.
It always seemed to me, it was like similar type of music, just a little more sophisticated harmonically and perhaps rhythmically as well.
You know, I never claimed to be any kind of expert whatsoever on music. I definitely am not. But I had a guest on, I think it was last week, Ellen Carlson, who's a fiddle player.
Oh, I love her. She's a great player.
Yeah.
And a great person, too.
Yeah, she is great. Yeah. Both of those things. And what she was playing was on her fiddle, on her album, was something that was something sisters. It sounded like war music from the 40s. Something like that, sort of like the Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy or whatever.
Oh, okay, so swing material. She's a great swing fiddler. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you know, it sounded the same kind of thing. I never would have thought that it would have made any sense until, A, she played it, and then you played it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well. It makes sense.
I'm learning more every day.
Right. No, like I say, it's, you know. What I was leading to and what I was hearing a lot was the music of Django Reinhardt at this time, too, which, once again, is folk music.
Yes.
You know, I see it as more of a folk music form than, you know, straight ahead jazz, gypsy music. But they picked up on the swing material of the mid-1900s.
Did he pick up on that and work with that?
It was, by all means. He was, you know, he took what he heard Louis Armstrong and other top instrumentalists, Coleman Hawkins, I reckon, of the day, and transferred that to the guitar.
So I have a question. I read in your bio, I just want to back up a little bit, that, you know, you were born at a very early age.
As were so many of
us. and that you were handed a guitar at 5 years old. Did you want one?
I was certainly of the generation where there was people playing guitars on TV.
Okay. And that
and
was cool.
I grew up, I spent my younger years, probably from 3 years old on, in Southern California, so late 50s in Southern California.
Okay.
You had a choice as a kid on a Saturday morning. You could watch Heckle and Jekyll, okay, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
Or you could watch Cal Worthington's country music show or Town Hall Party or all of these country music shows. I watched those. I watched Lawrence Welk because he had a guitar player up there, Buddy Merrill. You know, that was just the attraction. And so, I don't know, I was just exposed to it a lot. My folks, too, had pretty good taste in music. I saw, probably in the same year, at about 5 years old, my folks dragged me to see the Kingston Trio and Duke Ellington.
At the same time?
Well, no, but I mean, okay, in this year, they were music fanatics. But I'd take them together. Now, I don't care.
They loved music, and
right,
they shared their love of music with you.
Yes.
Okay, but they did not. They weren't playing music.
They were not musicians. I can't find any musicians. I mean, people talk about coming from generations of musicians and having the tradition handed down within their family. I can't find any musicians in my family. So
you decide to buck the system. You say, Ma, Dad, I want a guitar.
Well, at least they had pretty good taste in music, and that's what I grew up hearing on the family hi-fi, you know, around the house.
Now,
and
did you play that thing like crazy, or did you say, oh, thanks for the guitar, and did it sit around, or were you just
Still playing Cowboys and Indians, too, and devoting my time to other pursuits such as that.
Did you keep
but,
it in tune?
You know, certainly not at first. Does anyone?
I don't know. I mean, that was the problem.
No, I think I was probably one of those beginners who, you know, it was probably so out of tune I couldn't do anything conventional. I was just making stuff up until somebody came along and said, let me tune that for you, son.
Yeah.
You know, and they got me back on the straight and narrow.
And they said, what? And you, like your first chord, you're like, wow.
Right. I wonder what that's called.
I had
the good fortune, too, to have in Southern California, there was a teenage kid across the street with a flat top haircut and a hot rod car and you know, in what, 1960 must have been a brand new Fender guitar and amplifier.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
And he played all the twangy guitar instrumentals of the day, surf music and Duane Eddy, and
nice.
So I got to see that firsthand, and that certainly put the the claws in deep on me as far as...
So then did you say I want to play electric guitar? Or did you say I want to play acoustic guitar? I mean, you
I had an acoustic guitar. I did not have an electric guitar.
Right, so you said...
I found if you picked real hard back by the bridge, you could make it sound like an electric guitar.
Because you could make it
sound the hard
a little
attack.
Bit.
I don't know. But anyway, sure, I certainly got an electric guitar soon enough.
So how long was it between that? So were you on fire at that point? And you're saying, "Hey, this is what I want to do," or did you say,
"I'm doing this now"? Is what I said.
You're saying, "I'm doing this now,"
without thinking about it.
Just somehow you were just doing it.
Sure.
In your first
band. Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of fanaticism people get into growing up, and
sure, and you were into it.
I was fairly fanatic about it.
Well, that's super cool. I mean, that what we were listening to those first tracks were obviously after you'd gotten good.
I didn't play bluegrass until, probably 20 years old or so. I didn't hear it. I'd never heard it before.
Okay. So
I was one of the generation that was introduced to bluegrass music by listening to Doc Watson and the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's "Will the Circle Be Unbroken" album. That blew the doors wide open for a lot of people of my age.
And for you,
sure, certainly.
Okay, yeah.
Doc Watson, Vassar Clements, Mother Maybelle Carter. Earl Scruggs.
What was it about that music that just really turned you on after you'd been listening to all this other stuff, the surf and everything? Was it something particular about the music?
You know what? What I've discovered in recent reflection is all the music I like has a primitive nature.
Okay.
Roots type music, whether it's old time string band music or. Yeah. Or that real high and lonesome bluegrass music, or Django Reinhardt,
I want to give an example of this, Django Reinhardt, because it's possible that, I'm sure that at least some people out there that are listening have no idea who Django Reinhardt is. I thought he was a gypsy.
He was a gypsy, a Belgian gypsy.
A Belgian gypsy.
Lived in was born in early 1900s.
And I...
lived till 1955 or something.
Okay. Lived till 1955?
I think so.
Oh, okay. So my impression, and I guess it's wrong, is that what he was playing was some sort of super authentic gypsy music, but what you're saying is that as he was recording, is this something that we're going to listen to that was influenced by the jazz, or wasn't he like the jazz guy? What didn't he invent
He was certainly one of the first folk music type players to get harmonically advanced, to have a natural inclination towards fitting in five chords where one will do, as a lot of bluegrass types will say, and just very highly advanced, and was influenced by, like I said, Louis Armstrong and all the major jazz that he heard so much of. Europeans have been such fanatics for American culture in a lot of ways.
Yes.
For so many years. I don't know how high in favor we are these days.
I don't know.
But, so many types of music that I play, American types of music, they are fanatic for over there. And so going to Europe as an American musician is always a blast.
And they become, so Django Reinhardt was a bit of an adapter. He was taking in what was going on over in America.
He was playing the minutiae, folk forms of gypsy music, and was being exposed to the swing era. Coming from the U.S.
This is
an original number by Django. I think this is called Belleville. So it's got the elements that are traditional, and it's also got the jazz.
Okay, yeah, let's listen to this for just a moment, and we'll be right back with you here on Local Folk.
Thank you.
Right on. That's super cool.
Doesn't that sound good?
Super cool stuff. Yeah, and you just told me that he was playing with two fingers.
Well, yes. I mean, that's certainly part of the legend of Django. He was supposedly a child phenom.
Okay.
Burnt in a tragic fire in a gypsy caravan. And, the story goes, doctors wanted to amputate his arm and he wouldn't let them. And, you know, survived with his two left hand small fingers frozen into position, pretty much unusable. So, played largely with two fingers up and down the fingerboards. And there is footage existing of him playing, and it's pretty bizarre to watch.
Is it two finger?
Yeah.
Is it just him all over the
place? Yeah, but he could plant the other fingers to make chords and arpeggios and stuff, and he did. But all of the active stuff is two fingers. He's doing what, you know, people since then have been trying real hard to do with all their fingers.
Well, that's what I was going to say. But was it was it just the music, or was it stories like that that were inspiring as well?
Well, certainly if there's a legend attached, it makes it all the better, more fascinating. But the thing is, for me, once again, it's folk music.
Yeah.
And it's a guy who was doing a traditional folk form of folk music and just went beyond with it, and so I can relate to it so easily, coming from the bluegrass thing into swing. And then I went jazz crazy for a while. There was all I wanted to do was play straight ahead jazz on the upright bass, which is the instrument I sort of gravitated to out of the bluegrass band.
So when you were playing those tracks that you were playing at the beginning, was that you playing bass?
No, I was playing mandolin there.
You're playing mandolin there. Okay,
right,
but
so.
you said this is just way too small and easy to carry around.
right, but who wants this convenience?
Who needs this kind of convenience?
I need like a drunk girlfriend to bring.
That's right.
Which is what some bass players are referred to in the case they're hauling around the bass.
Well, it kind of seems
like
it. And
I hope that nobody takes that wrong.
Let's
but yeah, no, everyone, the unique thing about this band, Summerdog, backtracking for just a second.
Sure.
Everyone in the band played bass, and everyone in the band was a pretty good bass player.
That's great.
Eventually, I learned to play bass in that band. But we had all the bluegrass instruments, fiddle, mandolin, five-string, banjo, and guitar, and we used them in any combination with any one of us playing bass. So I came out of that band a pretty good bass player and a pretty interested student of the bass, and was listening to too much jazz at the time, and so... I had to come to the East Coast.
So you had to come to the East Coast where the jazz was.
Certainly.
Now, playing with a group of people that all played bass, you all must have had some pretty awesome sense of rhythm.
Oh, no. Everyone in that band that you heard those first two tracks that we played were phenomenal, top-notch musicians. One guy quit, broke up the band.
Oh,
couldn't
really?
Replace him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're talking about here.
And then you said, "That's it. I'm going to the East Coast because I got to play."
But the band split up, and I was free. And,
So, did you have friends out here or something? Or?
Yes, I knew some folks.
Okay.
I moved to Newburyport, Mass. Initially.
Oh, you did.
And I met Larry Garland, who I can never stop singing the praises of. He's a local legend, a local hero to me. A great piano player and singer. I met him and started playing with him, and my jazz education. Ensued.
That's excellent.
Playing with Larry, he's such a phenomenally advanced musician, and he knows a thousand tunes, thousands of tunes.
He's still playing.
Yes.
And he's playing down at the press room.
Oh, he's had a Tuesday night thing at the press room for how long? I don't know, 15, 20 years?
Yeah, I need to have him on the show.
Yeah.
I definitely do.
He is the dean of the Portsmouth music scene.
Yeah,
I would say.
I just recorded an interview with Tom Hall, who has been running the Friday night session at the press room for over 30 years.
Yeah.
And Larry Garland is probably the jazz equivalent in
exactly.
a lot of ways.
Sure. Very easy parallel to draw there.
Yeah. So he taught you. He mentored you, would
well,
you say?
Well, no. The thing that was cool about Larry is he just played whatever he was going to play.
Okay.
And if you caught on, cool. But he wasn't going to say, no, you have to play these changes. I played with other, I learned a lot from another piano player named Charlie Betchler, who lived in Newburyport when I moved there. And Charlie had a different style of teaching. He insisted I play every single change that he played in the reharmonized structure that he used.
Okay.
Larry played whatever he wanted, which was all just beautiful stuff. And eventually I went, oh. And started playing what he was playing.
So different styles.
It took me a while to hear it.
Okay, so but and he just said, "Hey, you do your thing. I'm doing my thing."
He
and that's
was just
jazz.
Doing it. He didn't really. Larry doesn't say much as far as giving anyone any like direction or anything. I mean, Larry doesn't even call the name of a tune or the key. He just starts playing.
He just starts playing, and it's up to you
it's
to
so
to play along with it. Okay, yeah.
And you just come in. You better come in at the right time, you know, like as far as making an artistic statement or whatever.
Was he strict about it? Did he ever give you the stink eye or anything?
Not, not at all. Larry never given me a look. All the times when I deserved one, real bad. He never once. He might give me a little grin, you know, eventually.
Hey, that's really cool. Well, was he down in Newburyport or was he up at the...
He was, I guess he's from Revere, so I knew him from that whole North Shore Mass area, and he lived in Newburyport, I think, when I lived there. And then he moved up here. He's been living in this area for as long as I have.
So my question is, at what point, I mean, I took a look at this list of these bands that you've performed with, you know, at least, and there's a lot of them. So how did that happen? Did that happen from Newburyport, or did that happen from, tell me a little bit about how you started going from jazz to all these other, all this other stuff that's been going on.
Well, certainly that's a natural thing to ask at this point. I mean, in talking about it chronologically, I worked all the time locally.
Yeah.
Portsmouth, up to Portland some, down to Newburyport, maybe down to the Cape Ann area, and did not have to go to Boston or anywhere else because this was such an amazingly strong, thriving music scene around here.
Great.
When I came to this area, I showed up with an upright bass, and by virtue of owning an upright bass, I had all the work that I could handle. Every place had live music. Any restaurant always had live music, at least like a piano bass duo or a little trio or something. So much live music in this town, which is not the case now, and I'm certainly not going to get on a soapbox about that. We all know what the economy's like and, mm-hmm. and its effect on everything in our mm-hmm. lives. But... that began to diminish in the time shortly after I moved here. So I had to look elsewhere. I went to Boston. I started playing with blues bands in Boston. So I've always loved the blues element of any kind of music I've
played. That's what
I've
I was
played.
Just going to say, though. I mean, was it available to you, or were you like, now that I've played jazz, it's time to go play blues? Or
I don't know. I would never say that I attained any sort of level of a genius jazz musician. But I played a lot of jazz, and I really loved it. And you find yourself, if you're working musicians, you mentioned you want to talk about, you know, different elements of being a musician.
Exactly.
And if you're a working musician, remember this, kids, because it's not all fun and games. You might find yourself taking jobs just to pay the bills that are not going to be the most artistically fulfilling thing. And in any type of music, you'll find that, and I was encountering that a lot in the quote-unquote, I'm doing the quote finger singer for you, those of you that can't see
me.
We
see
right
quote
now.
Marks here in the air.
Jazz scene, you do a lot of that, and there's a lot of self-important young cats, you know. And anyhow, so, you know, you can. I found that I need a variety anyway.
Okay.
I thrive on having a variety of music to play. If I had to play all one type. So, I don't know, a couple of jazz or blues gigs were thrown at me, and I got into it and listened to the repertoire.
Yeah.
And played with some of the better blues acts in the Northeast and the world, eventually, with Kim Wilson, you mentioned, the Fabulous Thunderbirds, and Duke Robillard's band I was in for years. I always forget, so I had to write something down. Let's see. James Cotton, of course, one of the greatest living Chicago blues harmonica players. I played in his band for a while, which was great to play with a mentor like that, a genius, a legend.
So this happened because of the sort of misfortune of not finding tons of work here in this area, so you had to go south.
Well, or just out of the area. Yes.
Or out of the area.
Yes, because some of these bands are based in, you know, other parts of the country that I've worked with. Kim Wilson is based out of Southern California.
Yep.
So a gig with him would be like, you know, everyone flies in from everywhere and meets at the first gig.
But how'd they know that you were good to play with them?
Oh, I don't know. Music gets out there, even if I've always done recording on other people's stuff, working as a sideman. And the music gets out there, and if the right people hear the music, you know.
And then they call you.
Exactly. And so it's usually a word-of-mouth connection. I was playing with this young fella actually, for Kim Wilson, I was playing with this fella, Troy Gagne, who is just an amazing guitar player and singer out of Worcester.
Yeah.
And he was in the Fabulous Thunderbirds for probably about 2-3 years, and then Booker T. He's Booker T. Washington's band. but he and I played in a band, and Troy went out to the West Coast, and he spread some of the music around, and he caught Kim Wilson's attention, and he just used us for gigs when he came out east, which is, you know, a common thing. A lot of these fellas travel without a band, but they got musicians stashed all over the country and all over the world, too.
I mean,
there's very few known singers, perhaps, in the blues and R&B market that bring their own band to Europe anymore.
Right.
Because they got musicians over there that are just killer. Can't speak a word of English, half of them, but they can nail like that Memphis sound for somebody or New Orleans sound.
Because they're going for it.
They're fanatics. They love the music and they learn it.
I've seen quite a few, well, at least a good handful of Japanese banjo players.
Oh, sure. They get fanatical about
it. Yeah.
One that I knew was such a genius that he intellectualized how to play the banjo before he ever got his hands on it. He told me he would lay in bed at night and listen to Earl Scruggs, and he visualized the fingerboard. His parents said, no, no banjo for you. You know, this American hillbilly instrument. They were upper-class Japanese family. Until he came to the U.S. to go to Berkeley and got a five-string banjo, and he was one of these guys that just picked it up and started playing all this stuff because he'd already figured it out in his head.
Well, think about that. Think about what that takes to do that.
I don't know what that takes.
Sheesh,
to do that.
I don't know.
It wasn't me. If we're talking about me, that's not how I came up by it.
Okay. No, not me at all. I needed to actually have the instrument itself. Hey, I need to let everybody know that programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by the Seacoast Growers Association, presenting farmers markets in the Seacoast region for 32 years with local produce, meats, prepared foods, garden plants, and handcrafted goods. That's at seacoastgrowers.org. I also want to let you know that here on WSCA, we're going to be having Thanksgiving with the Beatles. And I just want to let you know that Sean Henderson is he's the host of Stay Tuned, heard here on WSCA every Friday from 1:30 to 5. We'll be live in the WSCA studios all day on Thanksgiving Day. He will be spinning the entire Beatles catalog from A to Z. So, tune in. Celebrate Thanksgiving with WSCA and the Beatles. You're listening here to, I'm your host, Steve Kerrigan, and this is Local Folk, and it is a little bit past the middle of the hour, so I just wanted to talk about musical calendar for a moment. Hey, what you got going on?
Oh, my musical calendar.
Well, you know, I'm supposed to have some sort of musical calendar, so on my part, I will say that on Thursday nights, I play down at the Stone Church and do a Celtic night from 6 to 9 o'clock, and then if you want some other thing to do, I would say that you could go to the press room on Friday night from 4 to 9. There's traditional music there. You know of any sessions going on?
Well, let's mention again Larry Garland every Tuesday at Larry the Garland press room. Starts around 6 to goes to 9, something like that.
Okay, yeah, that's a super...
By all means, which is followed by the world-famous Press Room Hoot every Tuesday, of course.
Oh, is that right? Okay, so if you're out there and you're a musician and you've wrote a song and you want to do something, and they call it a hoot, and somebody told me that the Friday night session started off as a hootenanny, which was a music session that was sitting around in a circle, and now it's
not
the
a term that the kids use much these days.
Not much, no.
Let's have one.
Yeah,
but no, the term hoot night has certainly stuck with the press room. You can call it an open mic. You can call it
we would call it an open mic
sure.
And what they were doing as a hootenanny was more like what I would call a session now. But I think the vocabulary just changes or whatever.
Precisely.
Do you ever go to sessions or do you strictly play gigs?
I go to picking sessions by all means. Bluegrass friends of mine, some of the folks I like to pick with best that I know in the New England area are not professional musicians. They do other things for a living, but they're big fans of bluegrass and playing bluegrass. And I think that's a very interesting thing about bluegrass music. And I suppose you find it too in other acoustic musics, old time music, etc. But you'll find so many of the people that are fans of the music try and play it too.
Right, right.
And
right.
Some of them become pretty good.
Even if they're not,
without,
even if they don't desire.
Without being a recording artist or a professional performer.
I still think that it's a good idea to go in and make an album, you know, if you're playing a lot
and
sometimes.
And with the technology such as is so accessible for doing that these days, it used to be, oh, we have to go buy a $150 reel of tape to put six songs on and then book the time in the studio. Now it's you do it on your iPhone probably or something.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, you know, you can go that far with
if
it.
If you have the app.
If you have the right app, you could do. In fact, you don't even need to. I don't even think you need to play music. You can probably get a bluegrass, you know, thing on your iPad, scribble back and forth on it.
Right.
I do not think it would be very good.
No, I think that more and more people are making records, and it's always been a vanity pressing kind of thing that people would do. You know, amateur poets and writers and musicians.
It's a great idea to have.
It's just a document.
It's just a document.
And you can share it with people.
That's right. Yeah, you go out there and you share it. I mean, I think that's important to, you know, I mean, I had Tony Giblet on the radio a few months ago, and he made what he admitted was just something for his family. But it's fantastic, you mm-hmm. know, and a fantastic Irish album.
Well, yes, I believe every confident musician should, the term is called recording, and it's what you're doing is recording a document of your playing, and it should be done.
Essentially.
Since it's so easy to do. I've threatened to make a record for, I don't know, last 40 years or so, and I've got some stuff that's, you know, I've got demo versions of original tunes, and I've also threatened to put out this Christmas record, which I certainly, if we were a couple of weeks past where we are now, I might have brought an example of that, but I will be the last person to encourage the playing of Christmas music before Thanksgiving. So I couldn't bring that.
I have,
perhaps an album or two's worth of Christmas music I've recorded all by myself on a four track. So playing all the instruments and, you know, from drums and bass, building the rhythm tracks up. And
how many instruments do you play?
I don't know. Several.
Several. You play the bass.
Yes. I work a lot as a bass player because I own a string bass. So,
okay, is it upright and?
I play the Fender bass too.
And the Fender bass,
sure.
Okay. So,
and I learned on guitar. So, and you know, I think a lot of musicians find that once you come from a guitar, if you have interest in being an instrumentalist, that was hard to say,
right?
That you can adapt what you know on one string instrument to another. You go to that next instrument loaded with a pretty good amount of knowledge already.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you just learn that which is specific to the instrument. So I think, you know, being a guitar player and saying, oh, I'd like to play the mandolin is not a stretch.
Okay. Even though the tuning's a little bit different.
That, you know, that's a little something.
That's just something else. But then you're like, well, 1-4-5.
And
then
if you go to the 5-string banjo, then you're really messing with funny tunings, you know, with the high string on the top.
Oh, yeah. Do you do that?
I like Fralin banjo a lot. I'm a big fan of it.
Clawhammer, whatever they call it?
Yes, clawhammer. Club fist.
Club fist?
Drop thumb, whatever it's called.
Drop thumb, boy, man.
There's probably a whole book full of
different words that you can call that. Hey, that's pretty cool,
but,
though.
Yes, clawhammer, Fralin. I like old-time music a lot. And once again, I said something earlier about the types of music I like. Share... A primitive quality,
yes.
You know, I don't go for the kind of music you hear on the Weather Channel or in elevators much, which is, you know, smoothed out kind of music. I like a type of music with rough edge, not all polished off it.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean...
So that's why the music of Bill Monroe and Flat and Scruggs has the same appeal to me as does the music of Django Reinhardt or Tommy Jarrell or, there's some jazz that, you know, it's really gutty stuff.
Well, what else do you have over here that
let's listen to a cut here, which is number 11, is Kim Wilson, who is, as you mentioned, was from the fabulous Thunderbirds and still going strong with the T-Birds. This is a record that we recorded here in Portsmouth.
Cool.
Yeah, man, at the Electric Cave with Jim Tierney at the wheel.
At the Electric Cave.
And this was a Grammy-nominated record. Best traditional blues record.
Awesome. Let's listen to this.
So this is a tune called Sometimes. Sometimes.
I feel like crying, but the tears just won't come down. Sometimes I feel like crying, but the tears just won't come down. All because I want my loved one, but she's nowhere around. Sometimes I think I want to leave, then again I want to stay. Oh, I think I want to leave, then again I want to stay. Yes, my thoughts so mixed up ever since she went away. She'll return someday. Oh, I'm so all alone, I know I can't last this way.
Yeah, so that's Kim Wilson singing with a great band, Troy Gagne, who I mentioned earlier on guitar, Steve Ramsey, one of the, I'll say one of the five, you know, drummers that I like to play with. And
one of the five?
Oh, well, there's good drummers, and then there's...
Well, it's true. There's gorillas.
You know, there's some,
something like that.
There's just, I don't know, as a bass player. Plus, I came up as a drummer, too. That's probably the most legit instrument I play by virtue of my junior high school band time. You know, I learned the rudiments and all that stuff. So
Oh, you did?
I work as a drummer, and so I tend to be a little critical of drummers, actually. Or
well,
maybe more than a little critical. Sorry,
well,
fellas.
No, that's okay. I mean, I play the Irish drum, the Boron,
uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh.
And so, but if you walk in some, I mean, people tend to, people that do that, or sometimes, you know, you walk in with one and people go, I don't think so. But I think it's mostly because people go, well, I can't learn melody. I know that for sure.
So
I guess
I'll whack on this thing.
And
I
really
know
make
a lot of
people
own tambourines. So, but anyway... I don't know, but that's Steve Ramsey, and Mark Stevens is a piano player, another young fella, and we were all part of Kim Wilson's band, East Coast Band, when he came out here and played. There was a period of time he was kind of sick of the T-Birds and was doing a lot of side project stuff, and we made that record, and as I mentioned, it was Grammy nominated, and thanks to Jim Tierney once again for recording us.
It's super cool. I mean, it's super cool. You all must have been thrilled when that happened.
Yeah, yeah, pretty exciting. I was also with another blues artist, Duke Robillard, and played on a record of his more recently that was a Grammy-nominated record, too. It's funny, once, though, you experience that, you talk to other people, and just about every musician you know is like, well, yeah, I played on a Grammy nominated. And it's like, wow, how many Grammy nominations are there?
That's I don't know. I mean, how many
There's
are there?
So many,
I mean,
categories now.
So many categories.
But anyway, it's something you can put on your resume.
I think that's, well, I mean, I think that I mean, that says something, though. I mean, I think
it's a good record.
I think it says it's a good record. I mean, I listened.
Or somebody got paid to like it or something. I don't know how this works.
You know? I don't know how it works.
Try not to be too cynical, but I'm not.
Well, that's okay. I think you can be cynical when you're, if you've been doing it for over 35 years. How long have you been playing music for?
Oh, I don't know. I started making money playing music when I was about 13.
When you were about 13, okay. I think you can become a curmudgeon by the time you're maybe 60 or
Thank
something.
Thank you.
Like, yeah, or whatever.
I was waiting for the permission
yeah.
for that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Hey, but you know, so you, when you're playing with these bands, maybe you've played in front of thousands of people at a time.
Big festivals, sure.
Big festivals,
sure.
and then
you do that for a couple of weeks in Europe, maybe.
Yeah,
and then you come back here and play downstairs at the press room.
Yeah,
or I mean, it's you get both.
I mean, what's the deal with that? Do you think is this a bad day, or do you think it's? I mean, you know,
no, you take what you get when you can get it, and you know, be happy.
Do you like those? Do you like an intimate venue?
And I also like thousands of people.
And you like thousands
of
people
screaming while I'm playing too.
Like when you get up on a stage and you start doing all that stuff, does it feel less primitive though, or is that primitive aspect still there? You know,
oh, I don't know. Sometimes it can get more primitive. Especially if, you know, not on, sometimes on a big stage, what the thing you run the risk of is everybody not hearing everybody, you know, at the same time or very well, or and so you can get lost on a big stage, and that's what playing real close together in a little stage is.
So that happens even with a really good sound guy then, huh?
Oh, well, everybody, you know, has their days or their limitations or whatever.
I see.
You know, and sometimes if you're not, I've found with other musicians who had not been on a big stage, they didn't know what to ask for, like in their monitors and things like that.
Oh,
they didn't, you know, I've seen musicians get up on a big stage for the first time and go, oh, no, I don't use monitors, you know. I've never had a monitor in my life.
Yeah.
Some of the, you know, they don't have monitors and they're a mile away from the piano and the guitar. And
you need a monitor, I think. You know, I don't know. You may not want, even on Celtic night on Thursday nights, I like a little bit of monitor because otherwise I feel like I'm yelling or something
well,
like
right.
that.
Well, right. It's nice to hear yourself.
Kind of on
back
a stage.
A little bit.
So what are you doing now? Let's talk about this.
Oh, let's talk about this. Well, I don't know. I've, like I said, I've been playing music nearly 40 years and, I have just taken my first straight job in all that time, or at least, you know.
Straight job.
Non-music job.
Straight non-music
you know, joining
job.
Joining the straight world, working for the man.
You're working for the man.
And it's a big change for me, but it's a change, you know, I've always liked change. And
I think you work for a good company, at least.
It's a pretty good company that I work for.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's a lot of virtues to how they do business. I don't believe I... Could work. Can I say it?
Sure. Yeah. Whatever.
I'm not here as spokesman. For
no.
My employer,
no. Whatever.
But,
yeah. They're not going to give you a
new
bonus.
Store in town opened up Trader Joe's, and I went down and applied, and they gave me a job. And even though I'm a bum musician, and it's a
I
fun,
thought they'd give
fun
me
place
one.
To work.
I thought they'd give me one because I'm a bum musician, but they didn't.
That was not one of the qualifications.
Maybe
they needed one. They checked me off the list. Aging hippie musician. Got to have one at every store.
We got to have one of those. So anyways, yeah, so you're doing this, but you're gigging out as well. So you're doing, you know, it's kind of, I'll tell you what.
So anyway, yes, so I'm trying to put the gig thing on the back burner a little bit. And I don't know, just enjoying like a regular paycheck. And I talked about how this was such a great area to work as a musician.
Yep.
It became less and less, yep. And it's due, of course, to the way the economy's going and the cliff.
You think it's the economy, or do you think it has anything to do with electronic music or anything like that?
Of course.
As well,
I mean, do we have another 3 hours during which I can expound on my vast theories on the decline of the desire for live music?
I would enjoy it.
No. Well, I'll just condense it down to a couple of sentences. Basically, I started, you know, in the 80s when I was the first time I noticed people not responding to live music like they used to. And I realized that I was playing for the first generation of humans that was fully raised from birth on electronic media, onslaught type electronic media, and there you get desensitized and you're not required to respond. And then MTV came along, gave them all kinds of entertainment by live bands, I guess is what it represented, and you were not required in any way to respond
or to go
or to leave your couch, right?
Well, I guess that would be a response, right, to go out, right, and see.
So,
it.
No, I see the decline of live music. I place a lot of the blame there, I guess. And folks don't want to go out, and they can rent movies and just now Netflix. And, of course, they don't have to leave the comfort and safety of their own home. Of course, it's not safe to go out anymore now that drinking and driving is illegal. and for a lot of other reasons.
They ban all the good stuff.
It gets out of control, I understand.
Well,
everyone wants to do it eventually.
So
that's,
I mean,
where the trouble begins.
So do you think that it's almost like a subset of the population that's deciding to go out and like support? I mean, I see these signs, support live music, support local music.
You,
I mean,
me,
you think you got
those signs up.
What's that?
You'll see me nailing those signs up. On.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I've always been a big advocate and big, encourager of people to
come out
to experience live music and try to make it. I always said that, you know, this Saturday I'll be buying the winning Powerball ticket.
Yes.
And so when I start my foundation,
yes,
what it will be bent on is force feeding live entertainment to people. You know, a lot of people say, if I win a, you know, if I win the Powerball, I'm going to put all my musician buddies on the you know, retainer. And I'm not going to hand musicians money, but I'm going to make gigs where they can make money.
Well, there you go.
You know, that's what I would do. That's that kind of advocacy I've always felt inclined towards, is just put live music in front of people, live entertainment, not just music, but other forms of artistic performance.
Other and forms expose, of artistic performance,
well,
like
theater,
the theater? Yeah, okay.
Dance, just, whatever.
What do you have coming up?
Oh, let's talk about the community or the music calendar.
Well, you got some gigs,
right? Yeah, actually,
right?
I got a couple gigs at the Press Room with a couple of acts I play with, a couple of pretty good bands. December 1 is New Hampshire legend Lunch at the Dump. And I've been playing with those fellas, with Pete and Chris and Doug. And what a great band. And sometimes Pete's brother Matt plays, who, of course, is a legendary, phenomenal musician, Matt Leavenworth.
And what type of music is this?
It's a bluegrass band. But like so many bluegrass bands, like one we discussed and listened to earlier, you just can't keep the boys down on the farm.
It's bluegrass mariachi now.
Well, no, but they will find their way into the city now and then and get that swing influence. And so they do some pretty good swing and stuff. Pete Leavenworth, besides being a killer five-string banjo and dobro player, plays the heck out of the pedal steel guitar.
Nice.
And so we got basically an acoustic bluegrass band, but we add the pedal steel on some stuff, and we do swing numbers, and it's a great band. They've been around since 1972.
No kidding.
Out of Newmarket, New Hampshire.
I have not been.
And they are an institution. It's my pleasure, you know, being a transplanted New Englander, Seacoast area person, to be able to play with these fellas. December 1 at the Press Room, anyway.
December 1st at the Press Room. Definitely come out for that.
The following weekend, I play with an old favorite of mine. There's a gentleman out of the Boston area named Racky Thomas. He's a great singer, harmonica player in the Chicago blues tradition. Phenomenal singer and showman. I mean, this is a guy that you just like to sit and watch and listen to.
And where's this going to be?
At the Press Room.
Once again at the Press Room.
At the world famous Press Room.
So you have like
the 7th, I think. Yes, December 7th. Day that will live in infamy. After Racky Thomas plays,
Press Room is something else. I'm just going to have to say they.
It's where I came when I first came to town, and I have not left.
You're not the only one.
Like so many people,
it's amazing like that. Okay, so you have two killer gigs coming up. One of them is New Hampshire Institution Bluegrass Band. That's going to be bluegrass and swing band, and then
lunch
the week after
the
that,
dump, yes.
Lunch at the Dump, and then the next week
is
the
Chicago Blues Band.
Chicago
and I'll be playing
Blues
drums
band.
With the Racky Thomas Band.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Drums with the Racky
yes,
Thomas Band.
Yes.
Okay, and upright bass with the Lunch at the Dump.
No, mandolin with Lunch at the Dump.
Mandolin at Lunch at the Dump.
So I don't have to carry the big
drunken girlfriend.
Yeah,
I like that. I like the name. I like the sound of that.
That's what they call it.
All right. Well, you know, there you have it. You got to get out there. You got to get out there and listen to music. Here in the Seacoast region, we have, world-class musicians. And they're
you
playing.
Do.
We do. And I have one right here with me right now.
No,
and he's going to be at the. There's a whole bunch of them. And I guess that's why I'm so lucky to have this radio program right here in New Hampshire. We're going to leave with a song. What do we have?
This is a band I play with out of Newburyport, Justin Quinn. He's a great harmonica player and singer. And this is a song I'm going to send out to my TV mama. TV mama.
TV mama. 16. This is number 16. And before we start that, I just want to say, John, thank you very much for appearing on the show.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a fun time chatting with you.
Yeah, it's been a fun time chatting with you, too. I loved everything I heard. And, you know, pretty soon you're going to, if you want to, or any of my listeners want to, I have an archive at stephencarrigan.com.
Oh, and I love listening to myself. I'll be here.
And you could definitely, yeah, you can, John, if you want, you can record that, make CDs, and hand them out to your friends.
Oh, I could sell them at the gig.
There you go. It's as good as an album. Yeah. All right. See you next week on Local Folk.
Now all you hip cats, get out on the floor. Gonna stomp the blues till you can't take it no more. Gonna jump the blues tonight. We're gonna stomp the blues tonight. We're gonna rock this joint till everybody gets real tight. Well, stomping the blues.
tonight. We're gonna stomp the blues tonight. Get out on the floor. We're really gonna rock it right. Stomping makes you feel just right.